with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycon, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Mark this day well. It is about a minute and a half past the hour of 6 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Mark this day and mark it well. Mark this day as a day that proves that determined people of good conscience, goodwill, and unflagging spirit can make a change in the face of manifest evil and can make a change for the good where no one thinks that they can. Mark this day and remember it. This is one of the best days of my life. This is a beautiful day. This is an exquisite day, marked by the heavens themselves. Clear blue skies, warm temperatures, sweet green grass in the yard, and the most joyful trip I have ever taken to Charleston, West Virginia in my life. Mark this day. For this day, I heard something that I thought I would never, ever hear in all my life. This morning I drove down to the Capitol at Charleston, West Virginia, and I heard something magnificent, stunning, and stirring. Today, I heard it announced that there will be built a new Marsh Fork Elementary School. The toxic horror at the foot of the leaking earthen dam holding back 2.8 billion gallons of toxic coal waste that sits beside a coal preparation facility, and little children are expected to learn there. In 2 years' time, will be no more. A new, magnificent community school will be built to replace it in a safe place, in a place where children need not try to learn in fear. It is the culmination of a 6-year-long struggle that has included protests and arrests, that has included one man setting out from his home in the Coal River Valley and walking all the way to Washington, D.C. Ed Wiley. It has included letters and calls made by you yourselves from every corner of this huge nation. People in Washington State made aware and concerned about the well-being of children they have never seen and will never see. People in Oregon, California, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Kentucky, New York, Massachusetts, Michigan, Illinois, all over this country, who have raised the awareness of Marsh Fork Elementary's plight. And have helped to make this a reality. What a magnificent day. What a day to prove. What a day to prove the effectiveness of determined grassroots organizing. Ed Wiley and his wife, Debbie Jarrell. Bo Webb, Judy Bonds, Vernon Halton, the staff of Coal River Mountain Watch, the Allied Groups, Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, Appalachian Voices, the Alliance for Appalachia itself, all have worked without ceasing, as the book says, to bring this about. And you may recall, hey, Bob, how's this happen? You told us a week ago they got the shaft. They did. But amazing things happen. During the horror of the Upper Big Branch disaster, a man named Charlie Annenberg watched at a distance. Charlie's the grandson of the founder of the Annenberg fortune. And Charlie watched how the journalists gathered at Marsh Fork Elementary, many of them oblivious to the horror under which they were standing. And he watched how the people of the community reached out to those people who were merely getting the news out, making sure that they were fed and had what they needed. There's no cell phone coverage in the Coal River Valley. There's no wireless internet in the Coal River Valley. The Coal River Valley has less communications access than some areas of Afghanistan, if you can imagine. But there was a massive and heartfelt outreach whose epicenter was Marsh Fork Elementary by the community there, and Charlie Annenberg watched and was moved. And earlier this week, after the news came out that there wasn't enough money to build the new school, Charlie Annenberg, well, he picked up the phone and he made a call and he said, I have $2.5 million here to get that school built. And all of a sudden, the chase was on. And today it was announced that there is enough money now to build the school. Between donations, the Annenberg Foundation's contribution, a contribution even from Massey Energy, who had previously pledged $1 million, but now, this morning, upped that to $1.5 million, and a contribution from the Raleigh County School Board itself, and monies from the West Virginia School Building Authority. And the school is going to happen. And it will be open 2 years from Monday morning. And what a magnificent thing that is. I don't know, frankly, I don't know if any small grassroots group of people have ever accomplished anything as large as this. This is monumental. This is earth-changing. This is the view that you get from the top of the distant hill of the promised land. Within reach. This is a wonder. For the first time in a very long, long time, the people of the Coal River Valley of West Virginia have reason to shed tears of joy. Instead of tears of tragedy. And you had a hand in it. I can't begin to count the number of emails I've received from you asking me questions about Marsh Fork and what can I do, and we've got to get the children out of there, and children deserve a safe school. And you've written your elected representatives in the House. You have written your senators. You've written governors. You've called the governor's office of the state of West Virginia in your determination to see the right thing done. What a day this is. If you have ever had the tiniest doubt in your mind about people's ability to change a very negative present into a positive future, I hope that you will take those doubts out and bury them. All it takes in the world is a great, tremendous degree of willingness to never give up. Never stop, to never surrender. Though the road be long, to continue walking. Though the mountain be steep, to continue climbing. Though there be fear, to move on courageously. Knowing that at the end of your struggle, there will be success. And today there was success. So many thanks go out to Charlie Annenberg. It would not have happened without him and his family's foundation. This is a day. I hope you will celebrate it as are we here in West Virginia. Because it is in part your victory. Because you yourself, you have all been part of the activist process. You have had an investment in this future. There will never be any way to put all the names on a plaque inside that new Marsh Fork Elementary that will give credit to the people who had a hand in it. But the fact that that new school will be there, and that it will not be sitting in the shadow of a vast and toxic and terminal sword of Damocles, will be to your and many other people's credit, and most of all to the credit, let me say their names again, Ed Wiley, Debbie Jarrell, Bo Webb, Coal River Mountain Watch, Pennies of Promise. Don't ever doubt yourself. Don't ever doubt your ability to get something done despite long odds against you. That's only a challenge. What a magnificent day this is. What an exquisite day. What a day for celebration. And what a day for rededication. At the press conference today, I heard repeatedly people saying, well, today we're putting all politics aside. I've never seen this as a political issue in the first place. But if that's how state government wanted to characterize it, so be it. Today, however, we saw the future. We saw the end of mountaintop removal. We saw what can be accomplished. We saw a day come many thought would never come. And we see a day coming yet where no child in Appalachia need ever fear the horrors and the toxic nightmare that is mountaintop removal. This is a moment for energizing and moving forward. This is a moment that proves the efficacy of common good people of goodwill banding together. This is an amazing day. So we'll take a little break a little early this evening for Friday on the Front Porch. You know what? I don't know if I'm good for 3 hours tonight. I came on home from Charleston. Right now, to the best of my knowledge, at Ed and Debbie's, I was invited to a celebration there at Ed and Debbie's. I was told there were pork butts a-smoking, as well as some wild turkey. Not the liquid kind, the real bird on the smoker with the pork butts. Quit it. Couldn't make it because I wanted to be back here. I'd love to be at that celebration. But I wanted to be back here to share this magnificent news with you. Because you have followed it as long as anyone out there outside the Coal River Valley. Because you were the first to begin hearing about it outside the Coal River Valley. And you were among the first outside the Coal River Valley to pour your voices, your energies, your heart, your soul into this effort on behalf of the children. So we'll take a little break. I welcome you to share in the discussion, share in the celebration, if you wish. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is activist radio. And you, my dear friends, you are the activists. We'll be back.
Are on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh. That your elders grew by, and
And so please help them with your youth. They see the truth before they can die.
Teach your parents well. Their children's hell will slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams. The one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why. If they told you, you would cry. So just look at them and sigh. And know they love
Welcome back. It's 24 minutes past the hour. A couple of hard edits there, but I couldn't resist either Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young or Santana, of course, and let the children play. And they can now. They will. 2 years from now, a class will enter a new Marsh Fork Elementary School that will know no fear. Jude writing in, saying, I am experiencing with tears of joy a powerful alignment with all in hearing about Marsh Fork Elementary. Incredible beyond words. Shivers are moving all over this vessel of mine. Great, great, great job. Jude says, I remember speaking because of you and the horn with two nurses from the Whitesville area about how they dealt with the knowledge of the massive impoundment just sitting and waiting to burst above the school. One of the nurses was actually at the school as we spoke. They had resigned themselves to the fact that it was part of living in coal country, and we've just come to accept this. And the work of Carl Daly and how he was allowed by his camera lens to penetrate the minds and hearts of all who were seeking to see what Brushy Fork impoundment was and the precious yet dangerous site where Marsh Fork Elementary sits beneath the Shoemate Dam. Persistence, action, and love still are alive, Bob. Breathe deeply, celebrate, and hold fast to what is possible. Jude. From James in Oregon, congratulations on the Marsh Fork School. A post up at headonradionetwork.com now about the massive good news. And if you'll pardon me a celebratory moment, there's other good news. Seeing the scales of justice beginning to be brought into balance is good news as well. This is also news. This is news you would never have heard. For those of you who aren't so sure about whether or not Barack Obama is liberal enough or ideologically pure enough, there is news today, though it is not being internally confirmed officially, there is news today that the FBI is investigating whether Massey Energy bribed mine inspectors in its relentless quest for profit at all costs. Massey is saying, well, we don't know anything about it. Well, you're not supposed to, guys. That's why the FBI is doing it. You'll know when you get the indictment. Okay?
Good.
That's the federal system. And that is exquisite good news. I feel a little uncomfortable, frankly, celebrating like this when I know what's going on down in the Gulf. It is, without a doubt, a horror of monstrous proportions. So far, I'm told that some 7 million gallons of crude have been released into the Gulf of Mexico. And that the collapse and sinking of that negligently maintained rig could well exceed the horrors of the Exxon Valdez spill in short order. I grabbed a bite of lunch on the way home, and I happened to be sitting there munching my chips and salsa. I have a real chips and salsa problem. Have I mentioned that? I do. When Louisiana Governor Piyush Jindal was in the process of saying, I'm not sure if BP's resources are sufficient to deal with all of this. Really, Piyush? You're not? Gosh, wait a minute. You're a creature of the oil industry. You're bought and paid for by the oil industry, Piyush. Why would you have any doubts? You know the resources are insufficient. It's the oil industry, Piyush. Remember, you believe in the unregulated free market? Congratulations! Look into the Gulf of Mexico. There's your unregulated free market. Oozing onto the shores of Louisiana, heading for the shores of Mississippi, Alabama, Florida. And God help us all if the Gulf Stream gets a hold of it and loops it around to the East Coast, too. Oh, there's plenty of crude to go around, America. Because we wouldn't want no regulating going on now, would we? Drill, baby, drill! Spill, baby, spill. Down in the state of Louisiana, air quality testing has been ordered by the state because of something that's being described as a pungent fuel smell that blanketed most of coastal Louisiana and New Orleans today and in past days. It is described as having an oily odor by people along the Florida Gulf Coast. They say it leaves a bitter taste in your mouth and completely permeates the air. Officials say that the smell could be from the massive oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. Could be. Might be. Sort of. We're not sure. Maybe. But it could be. And the symptoms of breathing that garbage, officials warning that people may experience nausea, vomiting, or headaches. Gee, it sounds like a prescription medication, doesn't it? No, this is far worse. Hydrocarbons are not good for you. Maybe I'm overstating the obvious, but they're not. Coal is not good for you. The burning of coal causes 24,000 needless deaths all over the United States every year. And hydrocarbons in most forms aren't good for you. Don't test me on this. Don't run out and huff some gasoline just to, hey, Bob said, oh, wow. No, rots your brain. Not good for any part of you. It's going to be hell down there. And, of course, Piyush Jindal, of course, BP's resources are insignificant to the task. Of course. And, by the way, for anybody who wants to know, just a reminder, hey, Bob, why do you keep calling him Piyush Jindal? It's because that's the governor of Louisiana's name. He can call himself Bobby all day long. It's not his name. He has never legally changed his name. No, he hasn't. His name is Piyush. It is as if Barack Obama... It is as if Barack Obama went around calling himself Barry. All during the campaign. I would not have called him Barry Obama. It isn't his name. And yet even the old gray lady of the New York Times will call Governor Jindal Bobby. The absolute paragon of journalism style will call him Bobby because that's what he said he wants to be called. If his real name was Bobby and he said he wanted to be called Piyush, would they? I have my doubts. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
I know what to call him.
And that would be?
Well, I can't say it on the air, other than he's a blithering idiot. I mean, people were smelling this stuff as early as Monday or Tuesday. It was reported on CNN. And people were becoming sick by smelling the fumes of that stuff.
He just doesn't seem like the sharpest knife in the drawer, does he?
I mean, he just called up the National Guard today. What's the man been waiting on? Christmas?
Well, and if I may, Jim, I realize we've got the National Guard for such things as this, but why isn't BP spending its money calling out professionals to deal with it?
Because they're too damn cheap, and they don't really care.
Well, let's add negligent.
Well, exactly. It's part of being cheap. it's the reason people are negative, because they don't want to take the necessary measures to alleviate what they possibly can. Now, it's going to be Tuesday before we have favorable winds or tides that could possibly take that stuff away, but I think it's gotten into the wetlands now. They're talking about now that the wetlands surrounding the New Orleans and places like that will be destroyed by this. It'll go into their root systems.
Yes. Not damaged, destroyed.
The lands go. And, of course, the wetlands are some of the major natural barriers that those people have against hurricanes and things of that nature. I mean, it just seems that New Orleans was beginning to sort of get back on its feet. I mean, they had this huge cofferdam, for lack of a better term. It's a type of a floating seawall that could prevent the violent storm surges, and they also began to try to rebuild some of the Ninth Ward and stuff like that with proper housing and houses that can take up to a category 5. And then they've got this coming in to destroy what protection they have. And last night you were mentioning the impact on the seafood industry there and what else it can do. And now I understand the Coast Guard is going to try to put some type of huge box over the thing, but I don't know what that's going to do except just keep it right there until that box is eroded and it escapes. And they call for, what, a half a million miles of that floating type of tubing,
right,
that can stop it. And it seems like they could have done a lot more quickly, because they knew how many gallons of oil
You know, Jim, I don't want to sound like an ass or anything, although 90% of the time I do come out doing that. And I don't want to sound mean-spirited, but I come out that way, too.
Well, people who speak the truth sometimes have a habit of being...
I want to line up every conservative. I want to line up every free marketeer. I want to line up every Republican voter from Diaper David Vitter on down at the furthest edge of the marshy ground of the Mississippi Delta and as it extends into the Gulf. And I want to say, you stand here and you stop the oil, because you don't want socialism, you don't want government services, you don't want taxes that can pay for this kind of crisis response. You don't want any of that. So you stand right there and you stop it, you free marketeers, you Ayn Randians, you freaks.
Yeah, let them hold hands and stand there in the surf. The only other way out.
Maybe they can read Atlas Shrugged to each other while the oil washes over them.
Yeah, and not to mention what it's going to do to the wildlife down there. The birds are going to die.
It's already doing it. I've already seen pictures of the birds.
I mean, talk about that movie, The Pelican Brief. Well, we've really got something going down there now. And, Bush was calling for more offshore drilling down there. And
so did our president.
Well, I hope this will give them cause for concern and reasons to realize that just because they have an additional source of crude oil, what it's really going to cost them in terms of long-term liability. And, you know, just absolute ruination of the ecosphere down there. I don't understand how people can be so short-sighted. The only thing I want to see these people join hands...
Well, they're blinded by their money.
Well, I'd just like to see them all getting together and have a circular firing squad. I hate to say that, but I really...
But, you know, everybody else said, well, you know, we're in the middle of a crisis here, and we certainly can't be playing the blame game. Don't need to be playing the blame game right now. We've just got to respond to this crisis.
We certainly do need to play the blame game.
It's not playing the blame game to talk about who's responsible. You know, environmentalists didn't do this. Grassroots organizers didn't do this.
Well, these people are going to continue to do this until they're called to account for their activities. I mean, just like you mentioned, that the FBI may be going in to take a look at some of the hanky-panky of nasty energy until these people are threatened with imprisonment and the loss of their ill-gotten gains, like Madoff. You know, I think Madoff needs to have a few friends next to him, too. And, these people who...
Congratulations, you're playing Mahjong for life. Yeah.
Right, exactly. I don't care what they do in there as long as they keep them away. But, this is just...
Well, I don't know if you noticed this in the local press, but Massey Energy has announced the formation of a new death lottery. Remember when the right wing and Sarah Palin and the like were hollering about death panels? Well, Massey has now declared that if your husband goes into the mines and dies, you have just won $3 million. They are putting out a blanket offer of $3 million per dead miner for any widow who will sign away her rights to sue the company.
So that's what a human life is worth.
I reckon.
I'm glad I never really knew what we were worth. Now I really know that.
But you know what? You will love this. You will love this, Jim. One of the widows, it was a daughter. Her last name is McKinney. Her name is Michelle McKinney. And upon hearing word of the $3 million lottery offer, she said, "Nope, my dad didn't have a price tag on him. Don Blankenship don't have enough money to pay me." She said she'd like to take every penny that Don Blankenship has and followed it by saying, "Maybe it'll save somebody else's life."
Well, I certainly can't blame her for that. As a matter of fact, that man ought to be arraigned. I mean, and just not in a civil suit either. I mean, this is, I don't have any training in the law, but how many RICO predicates could they amass against these people, Bob?
Oh, dear God. You could get started tomorrow and not be done for a year, Jim.
I don't think they could have gathered that much against Al Capone.
The fact of the matter is, if you look at the RICO statute, there are so many elements in that that match Massey Energy, it's not even funny.
Now, that law has been on the books since April of 1970?
Thereabouts, yeah.
And you can imagine the violations and the criminal conspiracies that have occurred since 1970 with these people?
Yeah. Yeah. And what's got to happen, and I know the right-wing response, it's, you're going to make it impossible to do business for upright, good, upright, honorable businessmen in this country. Well, first, you're going to have to show me some. Second, no, we're not. We are simply going to impose penalties that are actually commensurate with the harm done. That's what we need to be doing.
Well, if you're upright and you're honorable, you don't participate in that type of practice.
Well, if you're upright and you're honorable, you're not in the coal business. I mean, I'm sorry, you're just not. And you know what? Let me add to that. You're not BP. You are not ExxonMobil. You are not the Royal Dutch Shell. Because the two are mutually exclusive. I don't care how many BP ads run on the TV, Jim, that have a little digital blooming flower in the corner. It doesn't change their predatory ways. And, now there's news and the information is still kind of dodgy. Not a lot out there, not as much as I would like to have. But there's news that a second Louisiana drilling rig has overturned. And this time it's in inland waters close to Morgan City, Louisiana.
Well, when you build something like that in the middle of the ocean, and my God, the ocean is so vast and the currents are so powerful, and they talk about rogue waves and things of this nature, and rogue waves being responsible for what's happened to things in the Bermuda Triangle, they should have applied the same concern to these oil rigs out there. And to realize, you know, is this really worth it in terms of what it can do in the long run? But these companies think they have any type of government by the balls because they say, well, we'll just stop producing oil and you can walk or not use your cars or gas is going to go up and this, that.
Well, no, it's even less complicated than that, Jim, not to gainsay you, but it's less complicated than that. They say, well, we'll just buy him. And that's a fact, especially under the terms of the Citizens United decision as handed down recently by the Supreme Court of the United States.
Which is?
It allows limitless spending by corporations in political campaigns.
Oh, the best government money can buy, right?
Or worst, as the case may be. Yeah, but you get it.
Well, it's very, very disheartening. It really is. But, you know, on a lighter note, I congratulate you on your victory with the construction of the new school.
Well, thank you, Jim. It is far from being my victory. I've talked about it more than anything else. But, you know, when you're somebody like Ed Wiley who has literally worn out shoes walking to Washington, D.C. on this issue, that's heroism. You know, Bo Webb was nearly run over during a protest related to this. And I don't mean accidentally.
Well, what are they going to do about all that stuff that's behind that dam that's supposed to...
Oh, that's just there for that's there forevermore.
They can't do anything with it?
Oh, they could. Shoot, Jim, there are coal processing the methods that don't even require all that water. There's something out there called the dry press method that might cost another penny a ton. But that penny a ton is a penny too many.
What does it take, 4 gallons of fresh water to produce or to do?
Yeah, it takes four. Now, that's liquid coal, coal to liquids. It takes 4 gallons of fresh water to produce a gallon of liquid coal. This is something entirely different.
Okay.
What they do is they use a lot of chemicals and water to separate the coal after it's been removed from the earth to separate it from impurities and you know, just rock and shale and so forth. And then they take all that sludge, all that goo, and they pump it into these impoundments that hold back billions of gallons, and they put it behind a dam that's made of nothing but dirt and rock.
Well, that's what I thought.
And I think there are 14 such impoundments in Boone County, West Virginia alone. The one over Marsh Fork Elementary holds back 2.8 billion gallons of toxic waste. And that's a baby one, okay? That's a baby one. Go on down Route 3 a little ways, and the Brushy Fork impoundment is down there, and it holds back 9.8 billion gallons.
And this toxic water is about as dangerous as the plutonium that comes out of a nuclear power.
It is toxic waste. And the thing is, where they put the stuff, it's not lined. It leaches into the groundwater. It leaches into people's well water supplies. It leaches into the aquifers. Yeah. Stunning, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I had no idea that people could be so short-sighted and not realize the possibility of one of these impoundments breaking loose and the terms of life and that it would cost on an immediate and then a long-term basis.
Oh, yeah. Look, like I've said before, the engineering reports for Brushy Fork say that 1,000 people die immediately when that thing ruptures, and in a matter of minutes, a wall of toxic waste some 45 to 60 feet high goes through Whitesville, West Virginia, where there is not a single building 45 to 60 feet high.
There's no way they can drain these impoundments?
Where would you drain it to?
Well, you could put it in a tank car and take it somewhere and bury it the way they do this plutonium.
Well, that's the sad thing. It's, you know, they don't just put the water behind the impoundments. They do what's called sludge injection. That is moratoriumed right now because what they because that is so toxic. They were taking the sludge and literally pumping it in vast pipes down into old abandoned coal mine works. That's what broke loose. That's what exploded and blew out in Martin County, Kentucky in 2001. It literally blew the sides out of the mountain because of the hydrologic pressure inside.
They just pumped it back down into the earth.
Yep. The Eccles Mine in Raleigh County there, a little bit to the west of Beckley, where in excess of 100 miners died and many of their bodies were never recovered from early in the 20th century. The International Coal Group said, well, screw them, they're dead, and pumped coal sludge on top of their corpses.
Well, Bob, I don't know what else to say other than it's...
Oh, it's breathtaking in its scope, but the thing is to take heart. This is a battle we are going to win. This is a struggle that we will win. You know, I remember a long time ago, I think it was 2004, about this time of year, when I went down to Marsh Fork Elementary for a rally, and I heard a great good man by the name of Matt. And Matt is an American Indian. And he said, Massey Energy has already lost. They just don't know they've lost. We have already won, and we must remember that. And it's true. We will win this thing. This struggle will bear fruit.
But at the cost, which could have been really unnecessary.
Absolutely. Again, remember, mountaintop removal coal only accounts for less than 5% of all the coal that's used for electricity in the United States. We could end it tomorrow and the lights wouldn't even dim.
Well. Oh, boy. Well, listen, thank you very much. Have a good weekend, and maybe you'll, well, be able to.
Well, we're going to celebrate the victory tonight and get back to work tomorrow.
All right.
It's okay. The only way you can do it, Jim.
Have a good weekend, and... Take care.
All right. Thanks, Jim. You take care, too. Have a wonderful weekend. Bye now.
Thank you.
Friday on the front porch, ring right up, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? I suspect you're there because this isn't a busy signal or a dial tone. Okay, well, I do hope you'll try back. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, hi, this is Haven.
Hey, Haven, how are you?
I'm okay, I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
Happy as a clam.
Okay, yeah.
Well, a clam that's not anywhere in the Gulf of Mexico, I should.
Exactly. It's been... Boy, the world has kind of gone to hell in a handbasket as usual, I guess. It's the last time I phoned in. And I'm a tremendous pessimist about this, about people's reaction to what's going on with this catastrophe in the Gulf Coast, in the Gulf of Mexico, because most of the responses are from people who are basically saying, well, there's a safer way to do this. And that's, to me, you know, that's really the illusion of safety. There really is no safe way to do what we do out in the Gulf of Mexico with these it doesn't seem to me that there's really a safe way to do it. This is exactly the kind of thing that is going to continue to happen as we do this. And I've been, and you know, I was listening to Arundhati Roy. on Grit TV a couple of weeks ago, and she said something that really made me think heavily. She said that, you know, all of this stuff about giving up and just, you know, there's no use, you know, we have lost and forget about it, basically. People who usually say that are people who can most afford to give up. Those are the people who can most afford to walk away from a situation, or those who can most afford to not fight for the rights and fight for people's you know, dignity, basically. And, you know, I thought a lot about that, and I was like, well, you know, that actually is pretty true. I mean, me, for instance, when I look at all of this crap that's going on, especially the past, you know, few days, it's just like, there is no hope. You know what I mean? This is ridiculous. There's just no hope, and because people are so, incredible as far as their responses to this, you know, instead of saying, you know what, maybe the risk that's involved with this is so potentially awful that maybe we need to find another way to do that. I mean, it's the 21st
century. Well, Haven, I think you've just hit on something, if I may interrupt for just a second.
Sure.
You mentioned the risk versus reward. It is precisely because we let the reward be a function of capitalism, but the risk be a function of so-called socialism, that the status quo exists as it does. Just as we've talked about coal so many times, and the fact that the true cost of coal is externalized upon an unwitting populace, so too the true cost of oil.
Right.
It is externalized. If the real cost of these kinds of drilling operations and the use of fossil fuels in particular, or in general, were calculated, do you have any idea, and I don't ask this because I think you don't, but do you have any idea what a gallon of gasoline would cost? It would be unaffordable.
Double digit. Yeah.
You know, the fact of the matter is, BP had quarterly profits in the first quarter of 2010 of 135%. Well, guess where those profits didn't go? Because our Randian crony capitalist, whatever system you want to call it, demands that everything be plowed back into share profits. Everything gets plowed back into the market. Plow it back into the market. Plow it back into the market. There's no money on the back end for doing the necessary business that is their business. They just fly along, fly by night, you know, close to the ground, hope they don't hit anything, and then when they do, as the Bible says, they cry, Lord, Lord. And lo and behold, you and I get stuck with the tab for the cleanup.
Yeah.
I mean, I find it difficult to see it any other way.
Yep, they can afford to do that, though, because that's because we are, and we should be glad to do that for them, because they're the ones who keep our lights on, that sort of thing.
Well, like I have said 100 times since last Sunday, Barack Obama, the President of the United States, stood at the memorial for the miners in Beckley, West Virginia last Sunday and actually spoke the very words that are the advertising slogan of the West Virginia Coal Association. He said it. He said coal keeps the lights on when coal is only responsible for 45% of the national electricity production. It would seem to me that if you're going to say something keeps the lights on, it would be whatever that other 55% is that's wind and solar and, yeah, a little bit of nuclear, which I hate.
Me too.
Coal's on the way out, whether they like it or not. And then, of course, the next day, the National Mining Association, and I can't remember the name, the freak's name, said, Barack Obama has parked his tanks on our lawn. After the man went out of his way to promote coal at that memorial.
Right, right.
It's a haven. It's enough to make you run rabbits. So, you know, the go ahead.
That is, it's just, one thing that I think is worth keeping in mind is that it's just all pretty basically not sustainable. All of these methods that we have, especially the ones that are so extractive. I have been reading, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Derek Jensen or not.
Name's familiar, but it doesn't strike a chord.
Okay. He's a very, more of a radical. I'm not sure what he's actually involved in, but this philosophy, this idea that this basic, basic industrial era is just completely unsustainable. I mean, I have a hybrid car, but it still requires mining, and it still requires oil drilling, and it still requires lithium mining and that sort of thing. And all of this stuff is still completely unsustainable. I mean, the greenest, most sincere green activities are really just an illusion, provide the illusion of sustainability. And I'm starting to kind of wind my way around to that point of view, because especially given the kind of political system, there's just no way that even if we were inclined to get rid of offshore drilling, for instance, even if we were inclined to do that, and even if we, you know, if there was a mandate to do it, the rate at which we use energy, whatever the next thing we decide would be, it would still be an extractive technology. It would still require putting human beings in very basic danger. And it would still have to be motivated primarily by profit. And it would still have to be pushed by a corporation or a group of corporations. And that, you know, until we get away from that, until we move away from that basic, eat our own planet model, we don't have a lot of time. You know, we're on borrowed time as long as we stay with that.
Because it is not sustainable.
Yeah, and he mentioned that, you know, the Native American or First Nations people, as some of them like to be called, they've been here for at least 12,000 years, more than that. And in those 12,000 years, they kept this North America, you know, they kept North America sustainable. They kept it in fairly good shape. And yet in the, I guess, 500 years that we have had colonialism and industrialization and that sort of thing, we have kind of shitted on the whole area, on the North America and Central America, and it's not sustainable.
Yeah, and let's not even start on what we've done to the southern continent.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We just need a new model. And, I mean, all of these other things are great, but we need a really new model other than everything being motivated by whether or not it puts money in the pockets of these gigantic corporations. Because they think they're immune. I mean, they feel like they live in a bubble because they're millionaires and this type of thing.
And they can buy a political solution to any problem that they perceive.
Right.
Which brings us back to what I mentioned with Jim with the Citizens United decision. If that Schumer Van Hollen bill doesn't get passed, then yeah, you can kind of give up on the lawmaking process. Because if ever a thing was called for as necessary, that's it. And the fact that chinless Mitch McConnell from Kentucky stands up and says, well, they're trying to take away corporations' free speech. That should be enough to tell you that the thing needs to be done. If that clown's against it, you can bet it's a decent law.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that philosophy just comes from a couple of watchings of Sergeant York. Remember when he captures all the Germans and he says, if you was trying to get back to the front, which way would you be going? And the German colonel says, I would go that way. He says, that's good, because I'm going the other way. and he gets back to friendly lines. Well, that's Mitch McConnell. That's the Just Say No party. Whatever they're saying no to, it's a pretty good bet that it's a good idea.
You're right.
I don't know that I've seen a peep from the teabaggers about all of this. They're not upset about it. Because, you know, it doesn't, well, they'll get upset. I'll tell you when they'll get upset. They'll get upset when they start thinking about the bill for the 6,000 National Guardsmen that are being called out to go work on it. Then they'll get upset.
Yeah.
That one's spending all our money cleaning up that oil spill. Oil's natural. It occurs on the planet. I don't know why we're worried about it. I despise them. I really do, Haven. I do. Just can't help it.
Yeah, they're tough to love, I tell you. They're tough to love. Tough to love.
That would be it. Well, Haven, have yourself a good weekend. I'm so glad you called in. Good to hear from you.
Okay. And one other thing. I keep missing it, but there's a little commercial that you have as far as a music show that's...
It's coming. More details will follow.
Okay. Will people be able to submit music for it?
By requests, by email, I would imagine so.
Okay. I'll keep an ear out. Sounds good.
All right. Good deal.
Take it easy.
All right. You have a great weekend. Talk to you later. Bye now. And let's just keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Oh, God. Since we're talking about the burning rig and leak, you know, it's amazing that up until Earth Day, just about everybody around here, all the wonderful redneck boobies, were yelling and screaming, and drill here, drill, drill, drill. Suddenly, they're not so keen on it anymore.
Well, I don't know that they're not keen on it. They've just sort of gone to ground, Cossack.
Well, this could ruin their perfect sugar white beaches for a long time.
Granted, it's tremendous contrast, but no, this is one of those instances where black on white, no. Mm-mm.
Oh, God. How can these people be so ignorant?
They're not. There's no, Cossack, there's no ignorance involved, my friend. It's pure, unmitigated greed. And on top of that, manifest negligence and a whole big old soupçon of don't give a damn as long as the check clears. Wish I was kidding. I ain't.
No, you're right. I mean, what drives me around the bend is the idiot people that go along with this. You know, the people that don't seem to understand their own best interest. Yeah. All these fishermen that are complaining about, well, we can't make money anymore because they won't let us catch, more than X amount of fish. Yeah, because the fishery has crashed.
Right.
You know that. Are you aware of that? Fine, you go out there and have a couple more great catches, and then you don't have any more catches at all. I mean, how ignorant are these people?
But you know what? They care not for the day. They don't have any ability to conceptualize eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow. Well, but no, they do conceptualize it. It's all eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we die. It's exactly what it is. They don't care. The next generation doesn't matter. Whoever dies with the most toys wins, Cossack.
God. And all these people supposedly care so much about the children. Great. You're going to leave them a completely ruined world. That's how much you care about your children.
Yeah, screw them. We'll be dead by then. Do you remember when George Bush was asked what he thought history would have to say about him? Do you remember that, Cossack?
Oh, God.
And he said, well, I don't know. We'll all be dead. That's it in a nutshell. I wish it wasn't, but it is.
But this is the thing. How can these people live with themselves?
They shop. I mean, you ask rhetorical questions, and I understand, Cossack, that they're meant to be rhetorically infuriating, but we're talking about people with no conscience. We're talking about people with no scruples. We're talking about people with no morals. We're talking about people whose entire the worldview is a compass that's got a dollar sign. And whichever direction the arrow points, if they can navigate it around to where it's pointing at the dollar sign, that's where they're going. Wish I was kidding.
No, I know you're not. It's just it's a horrible thing to realize.
It is indeed.
Because I think about it, I don't have kids, so I can't trot out that old bromide. But like the Indians who preceded us here, I care about what's going to happen seven generations from now.
Yeah, well, that's my curse, Cossack, because I wonder, sometimes I get a little frustrated, a little sad, because I think, I'd really like to see this place in 1,000 years. Because I've seen things that rested beneath the dirt from 1,000 years ago, or 2,000, or 3,000.
Right.
And that will leave an indelible change upon your spirit. And when I think about what's this place going to look like in 1,000 years, I think about capped wells under the sea. And I think about sludge dams abandoned when the culture no longer cares about them. Because, you see, Massey Energy, for instance, not to turn it back to Massey, but Massey Energy, once they're done ripping out all the coal, they're leaving.
Yeah.
And they're going to leave their sludge dams, too.
Of course.
And then we're on the hook for whatever happens, just like the people of the United States are on the hook for trying to stop BP's monumental negligence from destroying the Gulf, the American Gulf coastline and to a certain extent the Mexican Gulf coastline if it goes that way.
Setting fire to the sea.
Like I said, I want all those small government conservatives and I want Grover Norquist standing right in the vanguard. I want him at the point of the spear, standing out there knee deep in crude oil, holding it back by the force of the free market.
God.
Sadly, it will not happen. Cossack, we've got them all lit up, so I'm going to roll along, but have a great weekend, my friend.
You too, sir. Take care.
All right. Talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And onward we roll. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, okay, so there's another rig that fell over, right? Am I here? I mean, I thought I saw that headline.
Yeah, you got that right. Now, only this one's an inland rig.
Yeah,
and the Coast Guard says it is not at present leaking.
They're talking about some sort of safety system built around it or some madness.
Well, no, they say that they're going to deploy, oh, God, what is it? They've established a safety zone 1,000 yards on either side of the incident. No vessel traffic is allowed to enter the area without permission from the captain at the port. And there's a salvage plan underway. 500 feet of containment boom has been deployed around the rig. An additional 500 feet are arriving to provide a secondary string within the canal.
Well, I mean, the thing that's killing me, of course, is the deafening silence from the drill, baby drill people, including Obama. I mean, they must be, you know... I don't know what to say about the timing. I mean, the whole thing is just so horrific. And it's
well,
like...
now, President Obama did say something today, Sandra. He said, what was it? We must make sure that all our workers are safe and that all these rigs are inspected and that this can't happen again before we're able to go forward with further drilling.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, I mean, no, my concern, though, is what about them 11 people that are missing? Hello? I mean, are they just gone?
Yeah, we're not going to talk about them anymore.
Well, no, I'm just saying, that's what I was thinking of. I was like, when they started talking about the oil story, I'm like, oh,
yeah, there's a, yeah, missing? Yeah, they're not missing, they're dead.
Okay, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I haven't really heard, you know, I'm thinking, because I read an article where it was talking about how the men who do that job, where they came from, and how, of course, there's not a whole lot of other options.
There you go. Look.
Kind of stories.
Yeah. Why does this sound so familiar, you know?
Right.
Gotta love them mono economies.
Yeah, no, I just was sort of, and then it's just the absurdity of, like, yeah, that's why there's been a moratorium for the last 20-odd something years, you know? And then they willy-nilly talking about lifting it like that. I mean, it's just sort of, it's hideous that it's gone on. I'm like, what else goes on for Louisiana? I mean, that's just nonstop down there.
And again, right, I mean, it's just one thing after another. And but it's always going to be one thing after another until the people wise up down there. Look, their congressional delegation is, or their senatorial delegation is made up of a blue dog Democrat who wouldn't vote for a liberal proposal if Jesus Christ himself begged her to, and Mary Landrieu. And then there's Diaper Dave Vitter, the free market kinkmeister.
Yeah, no, I thought it was quite interesting that, of all people, Bill Nelson, oh, well, this drilling thing is a non-starter. You know, all of a sudden that's what's emanating from the Senate. And it's just like, you know, yeah, I really don't think, you know, that's the consequences. I mean, that's never thought of. And I was looking at pictures of that slick. I mean, are you kidding me?
Oh, it's huge. Yeah, and only going to get bigger.
Well, and then I was listening to this one expert, and he was saying we could be looking at months of this seeping out. You see what I'm saying? And I can't even wrap my head around the devastation.
And then Piyush, and then, like I said, Piyush Jindal comes out and says, I'm not sure that BP has deployed enough, because, you know, he talks like Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, it's very hideous.
I'm not sure that BP has enough resources to deal with this.
Well, no.
Really?
Obama kidding. Just said, talking about the Defense Department, I'm like, okay, yeah, 53% of our discretionary dollars go there. I guess now they got to take care of everything.
Yeah, and you know how they're going to take care of it?
But burn it?
No, they're going to bomb it.
Bomb it. Well, listen, the thing about it is just sort of, okay, wait a minute. And you said it earlier. It's like profit. Oh, accident. Now the government needs to step in. Come the hell on.
Yeah, well, that's the socialism part.
No, it's just, I'm just saying, but it's so true. It's just like, you know, that was like one of the truer things you said in a while. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what's going on. And the externalities are just ginormous, and it's never discussed. You know, our gas is subsidized, you know, by extra taxes on other ends. I mean, it's just, all of it is such a shitty system. And it just seems to be coming home to roost, because this spill, now they're talking about it as if, oh, this might be one of the worst ones in history. How did it all of a sudden become the worst one, one of the worst ones in history, Bob?
Because the last worst one in history didn't leave a sufficient mark on our consciousness to keep another worst one from in history from happening. Remember, God knows it took long enough, but those Exxon lawyers finally got their, you know, thy will be done, because they went up to the Supreme Court of the United States and got the rats to reduce a multi-billion dollar punitive damage award, which is meant, after all, to, come on, everybody, punish.
Well,
they got it reduced to a paltry $500 million, and, you know, shoot. Exxon can pull that together from its collective toenail clippings.
Once again, it's like, okay, you know, we always talk about our energy policy as a national security issue, yet and still, the profit motive can never be interfered with, even to the detriment of our coastline, everything. It's absurd, because I'm telling you, you look at the people in Florida, all the people in the face of this spill, they're all freaking out. They're like, oh my God, our livelihood.
What's going to happen to the unemployed? Yeah, what's going to happen to the unemployment numbers, Sandra, when we add into them every shrimper, every fisherman, every infrastructure, the packing house, whatever, along the American Gulf Coast? What happens then?
Right, and I'm just saying, it's like, it's madness. And it's madness in the face of this, and we even can imagine this. This isn't a thing that gets me pissed off. This isn't something that's unimaginable.
No, this is
we didn't know this could happen bullshit.
No, there's actually a legal term for this. What happened at the Horizon rig is called reasonable and foreseeable. And because it's reasonable and foreseeable, the BP ought to be on almost a bankruptcy-inducing hook. Are they? Don't think so. 135% profit jump in first quarter 2010. And we're not going to take any of it. So, you know, that's a little sobering. Because, again, there's a dodge involved. Remember, there's a dodge involved here. And that is the fact that, once again, you know, BP didn't own the rig. They leased it from a Swiss firm.
Okay, then that's supposed to absolve them? Is that what we're being told now?
I don't know that. I don't know that we're being told that, but it certainly adds a layer of litigation insulation.
But I was listening to Obama talking about, BP is responsible for the cleanup. He slipped that in before he dropped, but the Defense Department. Yeah, at which point, that's all I heard. It just sort of grew exponentially. I'm like, oh, wait a minute, that Defense Department is owned by the people, not BP. You understand what I'm saying?
Last I checked.
And I'm like, right. BP got more money than God. Let them use all that and deal with it. I'm just sort of, wait a minute.
Yeah, and by the way, while we're calculating the loss of all those fishing and shrimping jobs and the jobs processing and all of that stuff, let's go ahead and add in all the tourist money, too.
Well, that's the thing. That's why people in Florida, they're freaking out, because, they see what's coming down the pike. And, you know, I'm sure people are now sort of getting a bit angsty about the response of the oil company. It don't seem to be all that urgent, if you know what I'm saying.
It is 10 days since it happened.
Well, this sounds like we've seen this show, you see?
We've been to this movie.
Over and over again. I mean,
if I was Barack Obama, I'd feel a little snake bit once in a while if I were him. Simply because, you know, the numbers come out today, gross domestic product's up 3.2%. And then, you know, and with this.
Not
and you just
long.
And you just turn around and go, you know, just F me running.
No, not like that, but those, that number, yeah, I saw that, but you know what's down the horizon is like a 1.9 growth. I mean, this 3.3 is the, yeah, it's, those numbers are really iffy. And with this business down here, God knows, I think.
Well, and here's the fun thing. I mean, here's the whipped cream on the, and that is, if you go over to truthout.org, there's an article there by Jason Leopold from today, headline, Whistleblower, BP Risks More Massive Catastrophes in Gulf. Because they're BP's just been sort of playing fast and loose. You know, look, I harp a lot on Massey Energy. I do, and I know it. But that's because they're the devil that I know. But the fact of the matter is, the profit-at-all-cost motive, Sandra, and you know this as well or better than I do, is not something that's exclusive to this corporation or that corporation. It's a doggone business model that is taught at the Chicago School of University of Chicago School of Economics, the Harvard School of Business. It is taught, it is inculcated into young, impressionable minds that the only thing that matters is holy profit.
Not only that, but the externalities are not even taught anymore. I mean, that whole model is applied across the board. Add on top of that whatever leverage you can get to play in the derivatives market. Hello. You see what I mean? And no business is immune from that folly. So, I mean, the whole thing is just horrific. But we pay. We pay big. These disasters cost us.
And again, as noted previously, not a damn peep out of the teabaggers.
Well, I'm not going to get no peep from these freaks. You know, it's just, like you always say, the sort of Randian model. And this is what happens when you have no, and I'll say it over and over again, democratic control over the economic power. That's what is missing here. There's absolutely none.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk, a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing.
Well, like this reform, the financial reform. That's a good example of that, too, because unless that derivatives, the only piece I've heard in that is the derivatives regulation, and how much you want to bet that disappears as it plods through.
Oh, I wouldn't take the bet. It's like me. It's like me last night betting on whether or not Alaska still doesn't have a bestiality law. I think by the end of the program we were down to one to 100 odds. I wouldn't take the bet on this one either.
Well, just because, see, that's the main. That's the way out of this is to make that market transparent. But like I told you, it's a $400 to $600 trillion monstrosity that those four banks, which by the way, I think controls 60% of all financial activities in this country.
Yeah.
So they're not going to let that market. I mean, the whole thing is a joke. But these oil companies, they also participate in it. That was like my main point. So when you talk about the taught profit only and that's it in these schools, yeah, you ain't joking.
And the thing is, and I don't have an answer here. I'm not the Shell answer man. I don't know what it takes to wake this country up. Because frankly, again, coming back to that, you know, the other elephant in the room. And that is, you know, you and I can talk about this to a fairly limited activist audience, but you know what, Sandra? Every time somebody tries to talk about this inside the for-profit media, there are 100 people ready to scream, drill, baby, drill. And, I mean, have you noticed? I mean, I've commented on a number of occasions that Sarah Palin seems to be really not having it. It hasn't said drill, baby, drill in a while. But wait, I mean, if I may, nobody has asked her either.
Exactly. You know, you took the word right out of my mouth there, because that's exactly what I'm thinking. The responsibility and purpose for the media in this country is to do what now? You got some bitch saying that every other day, and this disaster happens, and they can't come up with that question? Come on. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And then they wonder why people
And why aren't they tracking her down to ask her?
No, and then people wonder why, you know, the media is looked upon as villainous as any of these other institutions at this point.
And not just villainous, but jaded and perfidious.
And
trustworthy on the same level as a used car salesman.
No, and it's just sort of, you know, and then it's like, you know, scratching your head because of the demise of paper, the newspaper, and everything else. Well, you look and see what you've done. You know, I think the lying us into that Iraq war has had such repercussions now. I'm sorry, I know we're all over the place, but this shit all connects in the end. I think that, the bailout, you know, people ain't stupid, okay? They may not sit and have conversations like this every day like you and I are, because who does? But, hey, you know, people know what's going on, you know? They see.
Yeah. Meanwhile, and see, this to finish off the media thing, Sandra, you know, every time that somebody turns the crank and he goes, and Sarah Palin pops up and screams, drill, baby, drill, there's a camera there. And just as I noted, you know, nobody's asking that question now, but it's, I guess we can't give the blame entirely to the for-profit media because, for instance, yesterday, I guess it was, she spoke at an Austin-based group, spoke on behalf of an Austin-based group called Heroic Media, okay, Austin, Texas, and they're a faith-based group that is driven by their insane desire to make sure that women don't have any choices about their own bodies. And their mission statement says that they seek to reduce the number of abortions, quote, by creating a culture of life through television, billboard, and internet advertising. So she goes to speak at this thing, and journalists are not allowed to cover it. And they're not allowed to do video or audio, and the only way they can get into the room is if they buy a ticket, the proceeds of which go back to Heroic Media. So you can't cover this hateful ignoramus. Unless you're willing, and you know what, if I'm a journalist standing there, I'm not pulling $50 out of my pocket to put in the pockets of a bunch of anti-choice creeps just to be able to quote that woman babbling some insanity.
Yeah, no, that's absurd.
So, you know, it's kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't. But the fact of the matter is, you know, Newt Gingrich's thing was out there. I think I commented on this last night. There was a screen cap from his organization. Trying to remember what the name of the damn thing is. American Solutions for Winning the Future. And they've got a website. And
the education crap he's doing?
It's free market and all of that stuff. And it had a logo yesterday, and there's a screen cap. Like I said, it says drill here, and in the middle of drill and here, there's an oil derrick with an American flag on top of it. This is yesterday, Sandra. Drill here, drill now, pay less, and then underneath it there's a headline, oil continues to leak from sunken rig.
Wow.
And, I mean, they are deaf to their own irony.
Well, no, I get the impression that these people, you know, because what you said earlier about we're all, you know, the world's coming to an end or whatever sort of BS line they convince themselves.
Oh, and you'll be pleased to know, Ron in Raleigh is informing me that the other rig that just blew out,
yeah,
it had a blowout preventer. The blowout preventer failed.
No!
There was no remote control shut off, and there was no catastrophic disaster insurance.
Okay, now is this a functioning rig? Okay, so we're looking at possible another leak starting
yep.
up?
Yep.
I don't know. I have to say the shit is just nonstop. It really is out of control.
And this is the, you know, as much as we had happy news at the beginning of the program where stuff like this is concerned, it's going to stay out of control, Sandra.
Well, no.
It's going to stay out of control.
Yeah, no, and I think it ties back to, you know, I'm sorry to keep harping on this, but just the whole deregulation environment, you know, now you're starting to see shit just fail, which is what would occur with common sense. If you don't regulate, hold people accountable, blah, 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 it's just, they're not going to put any money into it. And look what's going on.
Just,
when was the last time we had one of these sort of spills? Santa Barbara? Is that what it looks like?
Yeah, I think so.
Because that was bad. That was why they shut it down in California, was that madness in the 70s.
Oh, and by the way, just because you remember Captain Reno in Casablanca saying, round up the usual suspects, right?
Yes.
Guess what? It turns out the concrete work.
Oh, here we go.
The concrete work on the Horizon rig. Concrete work was done by Halliburton.
Oh, yes. I saw that little. I saw that little connection.
A dog.
I don't know what kind of work they do.
Yeah, and they, well, right, you know, they electrocute soldiers in Iraq.
Right, right. And then they move their shit to Dubai.
Right, and let's see, there's another one out there that was really beautiful. They served rotten meat and vegetables at $29 per person for our soldiers. Yeah,
right.
They did that.
And, you know, which there is no explainable reason for getting rid of your soldiers who did mess. I still will never believe the argument behind that fiasco. It's incredible.
And here, you know, and here's the real kicker. This thing was 200 miles off the Louisiana coast.
Yeah.
Now, the last time I took my family, and this was 11 years ago, that's the last time we had a vacation. The last time I took my family down to the Gulf Coast, we go to the Gulf Coast of Alabama, you know, the Redneck Riviera. And you can stand on the very western point of the island that is Gulf Shores at an old Civil War, pre-Civil War fortress called Fort Morgan. And you can stand on the ramparts of Fort Morgan, and you can look out and see, you know, not 10 miles out, not 5 miles out, one of these oil platforms. Now, what happens when one of those little bastards goes?
Well, I mean, that's...
I mean, there's no response time.
No, and that's what it used to be like here in California, too. You could just look out and see the rig dotted everywhere, you know, and it took just some sort of horrific, like Santa Barbara was caked, and all of a sudden the policy changed. I'm not saying that that's going to happen in the Gulf, obviously not, because they've been drilling down there, what, for decades, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm more inclined to blame it on, you know, just the chronic lies about state-of-the-art safety. I don't believe any of that. I don't believe it's any much better than it was in the 70s, right? Because they're not putting the money there.
Right.
They're plowing it into
profits.
Shareholders and stuff. So I don't think the state-of-the-art technology is there. I think that's a load.
And but you know what? I got to tell you, I don't hold the shareholders harmless in this. You know, the fact of the matter is they own that stock because of the way the profit is plowed back into it. And frankly, there needs to be and it would take a wholesale re-envisioning of how we view the law of corporations. But I believe liability should be imposed on BP from the CEO all the way down to the last little shareholder. If by no other means, by declaring. I believe, look, Sandra, I believe in a corporate death penalty.
Well, yeah, I mean, these people should be de-chartered. I mean, that's what they used to do back in the day. Corporations were created by the state. They served their purpose, and then they were taken apart. You know, and then you had the railroad decision, and it's been out of control ever since.
Yeah.
And there's no way to respond to
we should,
stuff
look,
like this.
You and I talk sports from time to time, Sandra. Let's put it this way. We should be able to impose as harsh a penalty on a corporation and its executives as was imposed on Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Oh, I mean, the Pete Rose thing. Yeah, you would think that man, you know, caused the death of millions. You're so right about that.
If we can do that, and Shoeless Joe Jackson, like I said, I've said before, you know, he took the money from the gamblers in the Chicago Black Sox 1919 scandal. He took the gamblers' money, but he had just a stunning batting average, never made an error, didn't do anything to throw any game, and he was banned from baseball forever.
No, but...
And we can't do that to a corporate executive who willfully, grossly, negligently, wantonly, without a due regard for human life or the country itself, allows this kind of stuff to happen. We can't tell that person he can never participate in business again.
Exactly. And you think, you know, it'd be like the cost of doing business. If you destroy the livelihood in the Gulf Coast, you are done. You see what I'm saying? That should be out the gate.
Yeah.
I mean, should just, you know, BP should be over with now as far as doing business in this country is concerned. They can take their little flowers and their little commercials, and they can go away.
Because they are some greenwashing bastards.
Oh, they're the worst. Every time I see them, I'm like, oh, no, you got to be out of your fucking... Sorry. You got to be out of your mind. Listen, only one thing I want to say, and I'll let you go, is I'm so disturbed by Oklahoma and their law. Did you know that that law also allows doctors not to tell these poor women if their babies are defective?
Yes.
No, listen, I'm sick about the wand that they got to shove up there, I'm getting that graphic because it is disgusting. It's like your ass is trying to take care of a legal medical procedure, and you got to be dealing with that bullshit, and you're trying to figure out what's going on with your unborn child, and some asshole won't tell you? Oh,
no. And you just kind of got to play 20 questions, you know, is it bigger than a camel, is it smaller than a bread box, you know. Right. It's a war on women.
No, and it's straight up. It's like sort of, okay, so the forced pregnancy slash just vessel house, you know, it's horrible.
Handmaid's Tale, I know you've read it. It's the Handmaid's Tale.
Shut the hell up. That's one of my favorite little reads. Yeah, I like that one.
And the juxtaposition between, on the one hand, Oklahoma, thou shalt have thy baby, even if thy baby has a baby's arm growing out of its head.
No, but the deception aspect.
Right. But then you juxtapose that onto, and I had this audio last night, Duncan Hunter in San Diego County in Ramona, California, telling the teabaggers there that he wants to repeal the 14th Amendment and make sure that the Mexican babies aren't American citizens, even if they're born here.
Okay, so now, but they're forever flirting with...
I mean, how do right-wingers' heads just keep from exploding?
No, but, you know, the 14th Amendment has always been a problem for the same old segment in this country, you know? Their whole, like, there's some people who are 14th Amendment people, and then there's the rest of us. You know what I'm saying about that?
Yeah, I'm sad that I do.
Yeah, I know you do, and it's just sort of like, I'm sorry that I know. You understand what I mean? And I hear that kind of stuff, anchor babies, all those terms are all so disgusting. The Arizona law had that BS in there.
How can you sit there and insist that a woman give birth to a child, but on the other hand, insist that the child not have benefits of citizenship?
Because it's not about the child. It's just about the role of women in this society and how it needs to be under control. I mean, the fact that this law is in effect right now, too, that's another thing. You know that. Until they can...
Yeah.
It's right away. Right away. They already have women come screaming out of the clinics because they're so upset about it. But let me add, none of them changed their minds about it, though, Bob. Hear this. They didn't change their mind about the legal procedure they were there for.
No, it didn't change. You called it a wand. I call it a vaginal probe.
Yeah, no, you know.
It's a sonic dildo.
No, it's...
And it's horror. It's a horror. But the thing is, it's also, it has, you know, every medical procedure, Sandra, has risks attendant upon it.
Well, no, but they're so concerned about this precious fetus. What about the waves that are hitting it? Isn't that a problem?
Not to them. And see, I mean, you can take this thing to its logical extremes, because I'm pretty sure that there are Mexican women in Oklahoma. Okay? Let's start there. So, a woman of Mexican extraction goes to a doctor for an abortion. And Oklahoma wants to make sure that the Mexican baby is born, but Oklahoma, by the same token, because they're contemplating similar legislation to Arizona's, wants to make sure that the minute the baby's born, they throw it across the border. Does that, I mean, like I said, it makes my head feel like it's going to explode.
Well, I mean, it's like you said, it's an attack on women, but more importantly, it's an attack on poor women and women who, you know, can't get in their car and drive on across to whatever other state they can go to, you know, except for the race to the bottom. I'm sure other states are getting ready.
Right, because wealthy white Oklahoma women.
Right, they go where they need to go.
Yeah, let's say, you know, maybe Richard Roberts' wife, when she's getting it on with one of the little ORU studniks, gets herself in a family way that she doesn't need to be in. Well, she just jumps on the ORU corporate jet and flies to a blue state where it's, okay, fine, you know, taken care of, bye-bye.
No, I mean...
But, you know, if you're working class or lower in Oklahoma, right, you go through hell.
No, and it's just, and you talk about this, and then you look at the Supreme Court nominee business, and it's like all of a sudden there's this one who is quite strong about supporting reproductive rights. And oh no, they have to scratch that off the list. So excuse me, if you support Roe, now you're too radical?
Yeah.
For the court? I mean, yeah, isn't it? Okay. It's like, isn't it the law? As far as I know, you can get an abortion in this country.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely legal.
What the hell? The probe. I'm sorry. I'm just stuck on that because I'm thinking. Let's see. Well, you're in there doing something that's really not a walk in a park or a smoke outside, and then you have to couple it with that.
Yeah.
In the hopes that what you're going to turn around and do
mechanical, non-consensual mechanical rape.
Oh my God! That's what I'm saying. I'm so appalled by it and all its implications and these poor women who were raped and incest too. That's what they have to gear up for on top of the abortion? And then have some idiot describe, you know, fingers
and
heartbeats?
Yeah, and don't forget, you know, probably has to march through a sea of Randall Terrys just to get in the door. Yeah, it's breathtaking.
Yeah, I don't know. And I'm looking at the man who sponsored it, and they always looked like the same, I swear to God, Bob. These
jowls that hang down over their
horrible
shirt collars.
Horrific.
Probably haven't, you know, with bellies such that they have seen neither their penises nor their feet in 10 years.
It's just gross.
If not 20.
Oh, my God. And this one, they...
Well, that, look, I mean, you know, it really is. Sandra, it's a calling Dr. Freud kind of moment. Because if you actually put these pasty-faced, doughy, white, flabby freaks on the couch, you'd find out that they are just absolutely rolling in senses of masculine inadequacy. Probably 10% of them are closeted transsexuals. Another 10% of them are closeted gay.
And they just hate women.
Yeah, and then there's the misogynist part of them.
Well,
I mean, it's the most hung up group in America.
Well, no, but let me ask something about the law here, because I really am a bit taken aback. Why is it that this law can be implemented right away? Is that just the court challenge has to come a year?
Well, no, I mean, the law, written into the statute is its effective date from signature.
Okay, and then so that was it.
It becomes law immediately. Because remember, this law was vetoed, Sandra.
Okay. So I'm wondering, because it just seems to be just really full stop with this. It was okay. Then they overrode it, and then bang, it's in full force.
Right, and then it's up to somebody to sue and get a federal court stay of it.
Yeah, they've all, okay. Well, I saw a couple of groups have, position some sort of lawsuits, but right now it's still going, though. You see what I mean?
Yeah, it is. And see, that's so that the right wing can say, we tried to protect the unborn, but an activist judge done stopped us.
Okay, so we should just keep our eye out for some sort of injunction?
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, that really is. And you know, that's not a gimme.
No, I'm not saying it is. I just was like...
But, yeah, injunctive relief at the trial court level, pending, you know, pending full adjudication and appeal, is SOP. But it was absolutely necessary to do that to some number of women because the... Remember, at the core of this, every legislator in Oklahoma who voted for this law, Sandra, knew, not suspected, but knew that it would, A, cost vast amounts of Oklahoma taxpayer dollars to defend.
Well, yeah. Right.
And B, and because there was a quote from some wingnut who said, the people of Oklahoma have spoken through their elected representatives, and I think them liberal organizations ought to just live with it. He knew. So there's going to be umpty bajillion dollars of taxpayer dollars spent on defending this indefensible litigation. It is going to be struck down. I don't even think Anthony Kennedy would vote for this.
Well, no.
It's going to be struck down, but they want it to be struck down. Because, again, remember, and I'm not telling you anything, Sandra, but remember, the Bush administration had the House, the Senate, the executive, and the judiciary all at the same time. And they never made the first attempt to undo Roe versus Wade.
Well, yeah,
and they did that, and they didn't do that because they don't want it undone.
No,
the only thing
all.
That brings
right.
those knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, right. drooling freaks out from behind the baseboards of the churches where they, like cockroaches, the only thing that brings them out is abortion.
No, and because they're so stupid, they cannot make that connection you just did. Because if you were some rabid whatever who wanted the rules changed in your favor, and you saw that your party of favor had every possible lever of power, you would say, okay, great, it's going to be done. When it's not done, you would go elsewhere normally. But like you said, these freaks, I don't know, they don't ever sort of, they just keep coming back for more.
Right, because the Republican Party is teetering as it is, Sandra.
Yeah,
it
well,
dies stone dead if.
Yeah. Oh no.
If they got rid of Roe and abortion was illegal all over the country, and then individual state legislatures had to act, the only place, the Republican Party would die in Oklahoma. It would die in Texas. It would die in Alabama because there would be nothing. Nothing to breathe to bring those snake handling strychnine swiggers out of their fundamentalist churches to vote because they'd feel like God's will has been done.
Well, the Republicans are doing a good job of bringing out all the Latino people too at this point because that business in Arizona, it really has gotten some people who weren't interested more interested, and it's interesting that Harry Reid, as dumb as he looked, is talking about immigration. Good for him.
Yeah.
Usually they don't know what the hell they're doing, but that's a good one.
He may see the handwriting on the wall and figure he's going down, and by God, he's going to go down swinging.
No,
and I have
I
to tell you, you've got a new fan. James in Oregon has been added to the Sandra fan club. Tell Sandra she's right on and so funny, too. And an interesting thing that I haven't read about and I think is worth more than a little food for thought, Cindy out in Washington asking, could this stuff in the Gulf be taking place because of the unsettling of the earth that happened with the Haiti quake?
Listen, that's a good one. That's an excellent observation. Yeah. Well, you know, what? All that shaking got to be doing something.
I mean, has that platform been there since Katrina?
That's the question. Because
so if it's there since Katrina and it gets the hell beaten out of it by that.
Yeah.
And it's Halliburton, it's rotten Halliburton concrete to start with, and then it gets the Haiti quake.
And then the shifting chili and the Baja quake.
Yeah, game on.
Right. All the shifting of the earth, I mean, who knows? And then this second one that's falling over, come on, man. That's rich. I mean, I just feel like I got to be sitting around bracing myself for the next natural and unnatural calamities that are going on. Anyway, listen, I'll share with other people.
Yeah, got them stacked up. You have a way of doing that, Sandra.
Listen, so anyway, yeah, have a good weekend, and, you know.
I'll be back Monday.
Yep.
You take care. Okay. Have a good weekend, too, Sandra.
All right, bye.
Bye now. It's about 6 minutes before the hour. Quick programming note for you. I just wanted to let you know, I've heard from John Fox, our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, radio host, and chicken farmer. Just threw the chicken farmer in for fun. He really is. John tells me that he's ready to jump into a massive redo on the website. And so please be advised that the web will go down later this evening. Not the web. Come on, we can't do that. Don't have that power yet. No, the headonradionetwork.com website will go down later this evening. As such, there will be a link up for chat and streaming even during the time that the site is down. It'll just sort of be a much less functional website. When it comes back, this thing's going to look cool. I've already seen. It is a way cool. And along with everything else, while it's down, the PayPal button will go down, too. We are closing out the month of April here. It's April the 30th. We are pulled up about $300 short of the monthly fundraising goal. We try to get $2,000 a month to cover all of our costs and expenses every month, and we're at $1,700. And if you can, if you haven't already, and you are able and it does you no harm to do so, I'm not saying it does you no harm, I'm saying if it will do you no harm to do so, if you could help us reach that, help us pull together on this last day of April so that we don't end up in a deficit, that would be very, very, very helpful. And do that, you know, do that before the evening's out so that when John takes it down, we're not completely whacked. But, you know, we'll be back and starting in May on Monday, and maybe, who knows, awesome things happening with the website. I think you're really, really going to like the look of it. I tell you what, I got a bunch of blinking lights, but if you can't tell, it's beginning to sound like I gargled razor blades. I need a little bit of a break and wet my whistle, so to speak. We'll come back with your calls, and one line open, 877-443-2366, 877 the numeral 4 head on. This is America's listener-supported liberal radio, activist radio, conversation radio. This is the horn.
The sun, red and enormous, began to sink into the western sky. And simultaneously, the moon began to rise on the other side of the river with its own glorious shade of red, coming up out of the trees like a russet firebird. The sun and the moon seemed to acknowledge each other, and they moved in both apposition and concordance in a breathtaking dance of light across the oaks and the palms. My father watched it, and I thought he would cry again. He had returned to sea, and his heart was a low country heart. African drums are silent, and the wind goes and poets at last. Out on the fusky islands, the bulldozers bury the past. And the low country sinks, she cannot swim. The dogwood feels the hurt, while the possum plays on borrowed days in their alligator shirts. One night they put a price on the sunset, and that got the whole world shaking. They rose from the grave for the weak and the brave, cause the street was there for the taking. And the wilders surrounded the condo, forming a frail human fence. And they shouted out loud to the roar of the crowd, same old story, for dollars and cents. Such good friends to me.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is a public service announcement. We can
There's a new type of music program coming to the horn.
They wanted me about a summer or whatever. Picture me buying a scam. I said never. But I won't heed the
battle call. Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience.
Down K Street.
The People's Mixtape.
Johnny's dead and Mitch's gone. Kelly Halfway was out on the list. And dead goes on and on.
Coming soon to the Head On Radio Network.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Hope you enjoyed the little interlude. I did. The Jimmy Buffett tunes, by the way, if you'd like to go out and get them for yourselves. Those are both off of the album Hot Water from 1988. Oh, 1988? Prince of Tides, and before that, L'Air de la Louisiane. And speaking of Louisiana, a little bit of information rolling in from Jude, who I appreciate it, who wants all of us to know that there will be an opportunity if you live in the New Orleans area. The meeting in Waveland, Mississippi is already over. But if you live in the New Orleans area, tomorrow, May the 1st, at 8:30 a.m. Central, it says Central Standard Time. I'm guessing they mean Central Daylight Time. Because of, well, 8:30 in the morning, there is going to be a community meeting with EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson at the Greater Little Zion Baptist Church at 5130 Shart Street. Probably pronouncing that wrong. Probably not pronouncing it Cajun or something. But 5130 Chartres, Chart. At least that's what it is in French, minus my inability. Chartres. There. French. 5130 Chart Street, New Orleans, Louisiana, 8:30 in the morning. If you are in the New Orleans area, it would be a great chance to interact with EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson and maybe start the idea. Maybe start the idea that simply cleaning up after these profiteering, miserable rat bastard oil companies isn't enough. That it is time that significant accountability be imposed upon them. I don't want a firing squad or anything. I just want to kill the company. And, you know, let the next guy who comes along to take it, let the free market work. And make them understand that we will regulate the hell out of them and that we will watch them like hawks. And if they screw up, they're out of business too. Easy enough, right? Yeah, one would think. So I got a whole bunch of phones lines blinking here. And I'm hoping like the Dickens that everybody hasn't just dried up and flown home. Let's find out. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, Bob, it's Andy.
Hey, Andy, how are you?
I'm still on the line.
Bless your heart.
You're missing that turkey drum. Hog hinds, is that what they were?
Hog butts.
Hog butts.
About the only thing fit to eat on a wild turkey is the breast. But, yeah, I'm missing it.
I don't think I've ever had wild turkey. It's probably pretty good.
Oh, it really is. Well, it's very, you know, when we think turkey, we think what happens at Thanksgiving, and those poor things are injected full of goo and fat and all kinds of, it's a much, much leaner thing. The couple of times that I have dealt with a wild turkey breast, I have done so by, and this is going to seem like heresy, but it isn't, you got to keep them moist. And you can't baste inside a smoker because you got to keep the smoker closed. So what you do is you wrap the bad boy in bacon. What isn't made better with bacon?
Wow.
And when you do that, that way it doesn't get all dried out. And, man, is it tasty.
That sounds good. Well, I just couldn't get over this tragedy, this ultimate disaster in the Gulf, and the timing of it after Obama just opens up most of the country for leasing.
Well, you know, I like to believe, I've said on a number of occasions, Andy, that if there is a God, he, she, or it is a God of irony.
Right. And, you know, the ultimate irony is that I heard I think it was a state senator from Santa Barbara, because the oil companies, and there is one company, I'm thinking Plantation Oil or somebody like that, that's trying to do some offshore drilling off of Santa Barbara. And they keep trying to make the case that the last time they had an oil spill off of Santa Barbara, which people remembered because of the massive damage that it did like a decade ago, and they're saying, oh, our technology is all different now. We have, you know, newer means of doing things. We've gotten all the bugs out. There can't be disasters.
Yeah, we got it figured out now.
Right. And the other thing is, this is the irony of this is, too, this is so close as well to what happened in your local West Branch coal mine. Again, non-union workers, they cannot demand the safety standards. So you blow 11 guys to kingdom come in Norway or in other developed countries. They would have it mandatory that you'd have a valve switch under, you know, right by the point of the ocean and the seabed that would automatically shut down, or could be automatically shut the hole down if need be. And that's the way it is in Norway, for instance. It's mandatory. The unions of the roughnecks there make it mandatory. But, of course, because we're in a fascist environment, you know, where the corporations run roughshod and the corporations have absolutely no worker input on their board of directors for what they do. This is something Tom Hartman harps on all the time, which is exactly right. You know, in Germany, one thing that the Allied forces did with German industry is they made it mandatory that half their corporate boards had workers on it. The unions were actually represented on the court. Because you know why? They didn't want fascism to take over their country again.
Yeah, because that had happened.
We didn't do it here.
No.
Didn't do it here. And what do we have? We have a fascist state. No, I'll debate anybody on that. It is, we are in a fascist state.
Well, I'm not glad to hear you say that, Andy, but I made the same argument last night.
Workers have absolutely
fascism is
zero.
Fascism, it's here. And you want to, like I said, God is a God of irony. I was visiting after the press conference today. I had a few minutes, and I visited with a friend of mine that I haven't seen in a long time. He's a lawyer. And I got into the elevator to go up to his office in the building. And I think you'll recognize the name. You know how most elevators say, like, Otis or Standard or, you know, whatever the name of the elevator company is?
Sure.
Well, this elevator was a Krupp Tyson. And I thought I was
a little past.
Yeah, I thought I was going to kick a wall. Not only Krupps, who manufactured, well, you know, everybody thinks, oh, they make lovely coffee cups. They happen to make very nice artillery, too. There's that. But then underneath it, that word, that name, Thyssen.
Yeah, I think it was the Krupp Ball Bearings Works that was a major target during World War II that they kept trying.
But
to
that Tyson name,
blow it up.
That Tyson name, that's the one that really threw me backwards. I didn't think they were still doing any kind of business.
But no, they are, definitely.
Well, and you know who that is, right?
Well, that was a friend of Bush's.
Fritz Tyson had the early on. It was a nickname that was given, you know, with great honor. He had the nickname of Hitler's Angel,
mm-hmm.
And it was Fritz Tyson that a youngish Prescott Bush, who was on the board of Union Banking and Trust, got in bed with to do Tyson's money laundering for him in the U.S. And the reason I mentioned, I was only reminded of it when you mentioned fascism because I just, and Germany, because I just kind of looked up and went, the sons of bitches won't go away.
And of course, you know who caused this, don't you? I heard today that some
liberals,
right wing talk show host, I don't know who it was, but mentioned, oh, it's Earth First. This was a...
You're kidding. Tell me you're kidding. No, you're just...
Terrorist groups.
You're just messing with poor Bob's head, right?
No, but that's...
Because I got out of bed this morning, Andy, and like some sort... You know, I don't go in for the religious hokum or stuff, but I had a vision this morning. I got out of bed, and for some reason or another, this vision came into my head. How long will it take before a... What are we going to call it? A Horizon Oil Platform Truth Movement gets its legs under it and starts trying to say that, I don't know, Barack Obama bombed the platform wearing his little black coat with his little black boots and his little black hat, and he blew up the Horizon platform so that to teach the hydrocarbon industry a lesson. How long? And then, lo and behold, you said, no, well, it's a variation on the same theme.
Right, with the environmental terrorists.
Yeah, Earth First did it. Because they have, you know what, they're so close to the Earth, Andy, that they have human beings who can exist without a diving suit, without a submersible vehicle, who can exist and breathe water through their secret gills at 1,000 feet below the surface of the water. That's Earth First.
Right. The other thing is, too, there is some good things that are happening. Actually, Halliburton, they have a credit default swaps, and they're called spreads on these credits. When they move in and out, that's the insurance you buy. It's the same thing that caused the kind of the bust-up in AIG and what they're trying to actually regulate now. But the credit default swap spreads, the debt, the insurance on Halliburton's debt went way out today. So evidently investors think that there's some trouble for Halliburton in this as far as lawsuits go, which might be a plus.
Any
saving grace, but not much.
But the thing is, and this is the frustrating thing, and I don't know how much you know about corporate – well, I know you probably know a lot about corporate structuring. But it's actually getting to the responsible parties that is such a daggum joker in the deck. I mean, it is the bugbear of the whole process. Because, for instance, and I don't mean to keep coming back, but, you know, the news went out today that it is believed that the FBI is investigating Massey Energy for bribing MSHA officials. Well, if they catch that guy, it'll be some section boss. It might be a superintendent of the mine. Tops. That's as high as it'll go. And they will hang that guy out to flap in the breeze until there's no skin left on him. And the Dan Bartlett PR firm, you know, remember former Bush communications director, the Dan Bartlett PR firm out of Austin, Texas, that Massey Energy has hired, will just gin out millions of press releases saying, we are shocked to find out this was going on, and we certainly had nothing to do with it. We had no knowledge whatsoever. We know nothing.
Right, that's the Lindy England modus operandi. Go with the lowest common denominator, grunt on the ground who can't really defend themselves instead of going up the chain like to a Rumsfeld and getting them for like the torture that went on.
Right. And on the prosecution, on the prosecution end of it, it's clearly a case of just following the path of least resistance. They did it with the Aracoma deaths. They hung out some foreman and made him plead guilty to falsifying records. Well, why would the guy falsify records?
Right. Fabrice Torrey, too, the same thing with Goldman Sachs. They'll go after this low-level guy when all the big, the heavy hitters knew exactly what was
going on. And the question is, and I know it's not all movies, even though everything with me is a movie reference, we honest to God need some untouchables. We need some untouchables to go after these corporate criminals. And I say, you know, I say pay them $500,000 each so that they can't possibly be tempted by anything that these corporate crooks could offer them, and let them be absolute bulldogs and go wherever the wind and the scent lead them and just torment the hell out of these corporations until we get an admission of guilt. I don't mean torture. I mean torment. I mean wear them out in every sense that the law allows. Don't let the CEO go to his executive washroom without somebody standing there with a cup for him to pee in, so to speak.
That would, sounds like a great concept. Probably have to pay him more than $500,000, though. But
okay, I'm good. I'm good for the million.
Yeah, you know, just another thing on this environmental thing on the golf course. One thing that Kelly saw today, and Sandra mentioned it, Ben Nelson came out, you know, the senator of Florida, not Ben Nelson, but the other Nelson of Florida came out and was saying, you know, no way that the whole energy bill has to be redone after this. And then you get the guys from New Jersey, Lautenberg, Menendez, the two senators, and my congressman, Pallone, and your guy, Rush Holt, who has the West Virginia background.
Yeah, he's a guy. I think he's really a good man.
Yeah, he seems to be good. He's in the district right next to me. I've seen him speak here. But they all got up and they wrote a letter about this whole event in the coast and how Obama didn't open up New Jersey to the drilling it anyway, but they are doing an LNG, a liquid natural gas.
Oh, you mean a giant bomb on the coast?
Exactly. That's one reason I could never get behind Corzine, because he let this go through, and I see the thing every day where they're building it.
Well, you know, Andy, there was a time when we lived in a different place in far, far rural West Virginia where we had to heat our house with propane. Or, I'm sorry, as Hank Hill says, propane. And having that 500-gallon propane bomb sitting in my yard around people who will shoot at a rustling of the leaves during deer season or turkey season, I never had a peaceful night's sleep.
Right.
Because I was just waiting for that sucker to go up.
Right.
And to have, you know, because these things are about the size of Epcot Center, aren't they? these LNG the receptacles or, you know, whatever they are.
It's going to be some kind of floating contraption out in the ocean, but it'll have pipelines going.
Yeah, that's going to be good.
Facility where there's all kind of oil tanks. I mean, it'll be a disaster.
Yeah, because Jersey needs another one of those.
Right. It'll be just wonderful. And you know there will be one.
Sure.
There will be.
It's the law of averages.
Right. When you're working with that kind of temperamental and that kind of environment, they don't have any experience with it at all. Because nobody else in the world, you know, rarely does anybody, maybe in the Middle East they might have them, but nowhere in the United States will any state off their coast let that happen. And one other thing, too, I want to mention that really has been bugging me lately is Warren Buffett, of course, the sage of Omaha, owns Berkshire Hathaway.
Yeah.
It amazes me the power he has over Ben Nelson, the only Democrat to vote against the reform bill. And in particular, he was holding out because Warren Buffett has $60 billion worth of derivatives that some of his insurance, and, you know, he owns Geico, he owns General Re.
Right, and he didn't want to put, if I understand correctly, and you're the financial expert here, but correct me if I'm wrong, Warren Buffett's objection was that he didn't want to hold back $8 billion of cover-your-ass money.
I'll bet it's even going to be higher next. I heard it was over $60 billion worth of derivatives that he's going to have collateralized. That means you're going to have to back that up with margin in case something goes wrong. See, right now, there's no margin requirements when you do these derivatives but you're going to have to put something up.
See, that just makes my eyes roll back in my head.
And this is exactly the way it should be. That's the whole idea.
Well, I mean, did we not learn anything from 1929 when, you know, margin call?
Right. And you have to have the money to back the margin because these derivatives are all going to go on an exchange now.
Well, the story I read said that Nelson voted the way he did because the Democratic leadership would not accede to his pusillanimous demand that that would have saved Warren Buffett $8 billion. And let me just add that.
He wants grandfathered in is what he
did. Right.
He wants all his derivative contracts grandfathered so they're not affected by the law.
But you know something, Andy? I have quoted on a number of occasions, and I've heard other liberal talkers do the same thing, that great line from Warren Buffett where he says, you know, my secretary pays more income tax than I do.
Right.
And then he went on and he said,
as a percentage.
Yeah, as a percentage. Then he went on and he said, there is class war in America, and let me tell you, my class is winning.
Absolutely.
Now he says all of this, and then he's going to quibble over $8 billion.
He also says that derivatives are the weapons of mass destruction. He's made comments along those lines too. And he's come out with good statements.
Well, how is he not a hypocrite then?
Other statements concerning taxes and corporate taxes, corporations not nearly paying their fair share. But the thing is, too, that Warren Buffett as well, I can remember circa like 2002, 2003, he got up there and he endorsed Arnold Schwarzenegger running against the Democratic candidate during the time that Gray Davis got blown out, circa 2002, circa 2003. And Warren Buffett got up on the same stage as Milton Friedman, right with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I'll never forget that. Warren Buffett, I don't think, really is the person, the avuncular type of nice guy he makes out to be.
Oh, no.
There are a lot of things this guy does that completely, again, undermines the middle class. And this thing with Ben Nelson, who also, you know, If Buffett told him to vote for the health care bill, too, because he was holding that up, I wouldn't doubt Buffett had something to do with that also, because he's probably got interest in health care companies that would have been vastly affected. Somebody was pulling Nelson's strings.
Sure. Ben Nelson is nothing but one big string.
Well, you got that right. Talking about the guy, we got to get out of there.
And yet he's in there till what, 12, 14?
I don't know, but whoever runs against him, I'll be giving him money.
If I've got it, I will too. But then again, what do you expect? What? Bob Kerry was an anomaly, right? What do you expect to come out of Nebraska? And that's with no insult intended to Nebraskans. But that's, you know, that's an entrenched culture, isn't it, Andy?
Yeah, it's a reactionary place. There's no doubt about that. It's a agrarian community.
And yet, at the same time, if you dial it back 110 years, it was those self same American agrarian communities that fostered the growth and rise of the progressive movement.
They were the prairie populace, that's for sure.
And you know, what happened in the interim? Well, my thesis is that factory farming and CAFOs and such like came along and effectively neutered any progressive thinking out that way.
I think as well they get pummeled with the media just offhand. I remember driving through there and trying to get a decent radio station. I remember I couldn't believe it. Three stations on the AM I had Rush Limbaugh on, and three different stations driving through, you know, at certain points in Nebraska. I'm just going, this is a right-wing media haven, man. It's the only thing you can get. So they're getting pummeled day and night without any kind of progressive message. Some of these places in the rural areas just do not hear any other. The most liberal thing they'll ever hear is NPR, and as far as I'm concerned, that's corporate media as well. And that's all they're going to hear from the left. They will not hear another point of view. They will just get pummeled with the right wing, and that's why guys like Ben Nelson get in there.
And I don't know what the fix is until you change the culture and change the attitude. You know, I guess this is the part where I could talk about, you know, the deep pocket liberals. You know, where's Ted Turner? Did he sign some sort of non-compete clause when he left CNN or when he sold CNN? Shouldn't that be over by now? Can't we, you know, this, he's got money to burn. Where's the liberal network? I mean, this guy gave billions to the United Nations, for God's sakes.
I think he kind of reneged on some of that, though, too, because he lost a lot of his winnings that he got from the Time Warner CNN.
When the stock tanked?
Broadcasting. The stock tanked for a while there because they did the AOL deal.
And that just was crazy.
And I think he had to cut his charity contributions that he had. He had to cut them down quite a bit, but still.
I hear he's got a great string of steakhouses, though.
Buffalo.
Yeah.
The Buffalo houses.
Yeah, one of these days I'll get near one, and maybe with Guy James in tow. I don't know if I can talk Guy into trying Buffalo or not. Hey, Andy, I got to roll on and hit the rest of these blinkers, but I've enjoyed the conversation immensely, and perhaps we can continue this as the whole nightmare unfolds.
All right, you've been a real trooper, man, hanging in there.
All right, thanks a lot, Andy. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
Bye now. That's Andy calling from New Jersey, and we continue onward. Nope, you're not there. You guys. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston, what's up?
Oh, not a lot. I was really enjoying your dialogue with Andy there.
You know, this whole network is just a little miracle for me. I get enlightened and informed, and I get taught. And it's some of the best schooling I've ever had.
Yep. And he made a point that kind of resonated with me when he was talking about Nebraska. I lived in Omaha for a few years, late elementary school, some high school. And my sister still lives there, and my mom worked at the University of Nebraska Hospital and the medical center there. And I had that same experience of driving from Omaha to going to college at Colorado State in Fort Collins, of driving through and having right-wing stuff, Limbaugh, omnipresent on the airwaves.
Yeah, you can't get free of it.
Yeah, and you know, they pretend to be the friends of, you know, people in flyover country, but that's who they're really manipulating in the cruelest ways.
Well, look, Preston, I like to think that I'm a fairly straightforward guy. I will talk about what's wrong in places like Nebraska and Kansas and Alabama and Mississippi, and it doesn't mean I don't like the people there. On the other hand, the Limbaughs and the Hannitys and the Palins and so forth will sing their praises. And the minute that the light goes out on the mic, they'll talk about what a bunch of damn rubes they are.
Yep, same thing they're doing with soldiers. You know, singing their praises, but just, again, just putting them in just the worst sorts of positions, and lying to them, deceiving them. And, you know, we've had this crisis in rural areas that's really not spoken about much here of, you know, farmers, small farmers losing their land and the auctions and the way they've pitted farming communities against each other with some of their products. Like in the past, there's a sense of sharing and community, and you help me raise my barn, I'll help you, we share seeds. They've literally made seed sharing a crime. Monsanto has, by selling these patented seeds that they sell everybody. No sharing allowed. You have to go to the...
Yeah, absolutely.
Corporate. Yeah, and you're supposed to turn in your neighboring farmer if they're using unauthorized seeds. I mean, talk about breaking down community.
Jesus, and you know, your papers are not in order is bad enough. Your seeds are not in order.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. So, anyway, on a brighter note, actually, one other different sort of note. I mentioned Facebook last time we spoke, and I said how some people might have some issues with privacy concerns. And we hear a lot about that, you know, the threat of identity theft, and I sympathize how that can be such a pain in the butt. And, you know, data mining, in a way, you know, people
yes.
getting all that stuff.
Well, I mean, I just have a policy, Preston, and it's no insult intended, but if anybody sends me anything that requires me to give Facebook or give the application access to my Facebook address book,
uh-huh.
I click cancel.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's prudent. You know, some things, though, I don't think we're going to be able to avoid if we're going to utilize the...
Oh, they aim to make it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and I must say, so far, for me anyway, so far, so good. And I buy things over the Internet. You know, I think a lot of us still go ahead and shop, even though there might be some risk to it. But, you know, I utilize Amazon and, you know, other exchanges of money and credit card numbers and stuff like that. So, and it's worked pretty efficiently, by and large. I'm afraid, though, that sometimes people get kind of spooked away from it for that prospect of, you know, getting your name picked up. Or I think there's a lot of concern about people, you know, I get these notes sometimes, Big Brother is watching you. And there's a lot of concern about that kind of thing. You talk about...
Well, sure. And look, I mean, a more concrete example of that, Preston, I don't know how many people are out there that are harried by debt collectors, bill collectors.
Yeah.
But a lot of the times, if you've got caller ID, I was reading a story about this the other day, if you've got caller ID and you go and you pick up the phone, it'll say, you know, Smith James T.
Yeah.
And it'll give the phone number, and it'll be a bill collecting agency. And very few people know that that when you see that, you can say to them, listen, before you start your spiel, I just picked up the phone, and my caller ID indicates to me, it did not say it was any sort of bill collection agency or any sort of company. It was a residential listing. You have spoofed a phone number in order to get me to pick up the phone, and that is a direct violation of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. What is your name? Where do you live? What is the name of your company? What is the address so I can give it to the lawyers, because you're on the hook now? And 9 times out of 10, the other end will go click.
Yeah. The state government of Colorado passed a law related to that stuff. You know, calls at home, commercial calls, and it's been effective. And I've been able to cut down on a fair amount of my junk mail as well. But I did want to say something else about Agent Fred, though, and stuff like that, that issue. And look at the kind of, positive side of Big Brother. I mean, I'm glad the FBI is watching groups like, you know, right-wing, you know, extremists. I happen to be a government worker for the state of Colorado. And, you know, in Oklahoma City, when that bombing went off, you know, what a tragedy.
Yeah.
And there are people in the FBI doing really important work. I think in the past, it's been more oppressive, but I think in some ways it's become a more multicultural and respectful institution. That's why I think a lot of people feel good about people like Barack Obama, that there are really some sympathetic people within these institutions doing work to help that man along. But also, the FBI is going after Massey, apparently.
No one will confirm or deny. Massey says they don't know nothing, and the MSHA says there is no investigation of us. So what that leads me to think, Preston, is that there is an open investigation, and it is an open investigation of Massey bribing MSHA officials. So that way, you know, under those terms,
yeah,
it is a true statement that MSHA is not under investigation. Perhaps individuals within it are, but MSHA isn't. But Massey, I think, most assuredly is. But again, the question, as I posed it to Andy, is, Will they pursue it to its logical end? Because if you've got, you know, some foreman who passed an envelope of money, say, to a mine inspector, and he took it, well, yeah, that guy's on the hook, that foreman. But he didn't do that on his own initiative.
Yeah.
You don't do that on your own initiative. The money has to come from somewhere.
Yeah. Good point. And, you know, I think shareholders, I think they need to bear some responsibility for what these corporations are doing. I mean, we're all going to sit back and just celebrate a big dividend check, and that's it? No kind of responsibility there? Of course there is.
Yeah, I mean, what would be wrong with a criminal penalty that says upon conviction of the entire corporation, 25% of the share price is forfeit?
Yeah, or that money gets sent to, you know, the groups that are trying to recover from the harm your company's been doing. like Gulf restoration projects and stuff like that.
Because the one thing I think that would do is it would impose something that a lot of people have been complaining about, you know, corporate ethicists, business geniuses, that kind of thing, for a long time. And that is the last place on earth to look for democracy in the United States is inside a shareholders meeting.
Yes and no. It's interesting. Sometimes, you know, shareholders do get busy and they make their voices heard. They get engaged. They take responsibility. And there has been an interesting shareholders movement.
Oh, no, I don't disagree in the least, Preston. But what I'm saying is that when it comes right down to voting for the slate, you have no choice.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes Hobson's choice look like a cornucopia of options.
Yeah.
You vote for the slate that the board of directors has put up, or you vote for nothing at all. And even if you vote for nothing at all, that's just an abstention, and that means that, you know, the slate still wins.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens regardless of or despite whatever shareholder activism may be taking place.
Right, right. I actually wanted some kind of a shout-out to a figure in the CIA. Again, the CIA is an institution where I think when you just say the term, a lot of people just kind of shudder, you know. But I think there are people there again doing important work. For instance, the former director of the CIA, James Woolsey.
Mm-hmm.
He's been talking about climate change issues for a while and the need to transition from a fossil fuel based oriented economy to renewables.
Yeah, and you know, that's very interesting in light of the fact that Bobby Ray Inman, who was a former deputy director of the CIA and is now the so-called lead independent board member on the Massey board, you know, this guy's a spook from way back. And you know, he's been running his mouth a lot. And, of course, he approves of what Don Blankenship says about global warming, about global climate change, about the need to transition. About the need for wind and solar, you know, because Blankenship says anybody who says that is a communist.
Right.
And so is Inman gonna say that that Woolsey is off his rocker and a greeniac?
Right. You know, and Hannity and so many of those figures, they try to focus the discussion on Al Gore, and the way they dehumanize him is grotesque, as well. But still, to counter their rhetorical technique would be to bring up, really promote someone like James Woolsey. Is Hannity going to tell James Woolsey he's a ego wacko, green alarmist, this, that, the other thing? That would be funny to see. You know, Hannity, these people really need to get pushed off that wall that they're on, the Humpty Dumpties that they are.
But you know what? Rupert Murdoch is more than willing to eat the losses. Because he's an ideologue. Glenn Beck has been losing advertisers hand over fist. There's no way he's got enough advertising to justify the salary he receives, but he's still on, and he ain't getting canceled.
No, but neither is the progressive media. You know, as many trials and travails and failures at times it has, there are these progressive networks developing, whether it's book club or Facebook community or internet efforts, blogs, so on.
Trust me, I know. We've been at this for a while, and it's a daily struggle to keep it going, but we keep going because of the perceived necessity for it. In the time that we've been here, I can't tell you the number of radio operations that have risen and folded.
Mm-hmm. And we're losing the great one tonight. Tonight is the last episode of Bill Moyer's Journal.
Oh, gosh, yes.
It was nice, though, earlier on NPR, and I agree with the earlier caller's criticism of NPR. Sometimes they are corporate, but they've got big underwriting from Marjorie Daniels Midland and stuff.
Well,
like
I heard about, that, what is it, Talk of the Nation, Neil Conan,
yeah.
Gave that Chris Korbach, that miserable right-wing anti-immigrant SOB, who more or less wrote the Arizona law, gave him 20 minutes of cupcake time the other day.
That's too bad.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, that has those moments that are very irritating. But other parts of that, the larger institution of public radio, there are things like, Terry Gross, Fresh Air. And today they played a couple older interviews that she had with Bill Moyers and around the media, around his work with Johnson. He was Johnson's press secretary during part of the Vietnam War. And, various things. He also helped to write a lot of the civil rights legislation and stuff like that, develop the Peace Corps. But so moments like that, I think, are just so invaluable. And they have a program called The World that I think is quite good. And just today I was listening to Science Friday, a weekly show, and that's fantastic. They talk a lot about these issues of renewable energy. Today they were talking about the potential for making fuel out of algae, these more benign...
biomass fuel, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know, and just real quickly before I let you go, a larger point I wanted to make about, making these comments about Woolsey or what the FBI is up to. Again, I think it's only fair if I want them to watch right-wing movements, I think they should surveil left-wing movements. In a way, I kind of welcome it.
Well, I can understand that, Preston, to the extent that we're not a problem. But by the same token, they did surveil. I remember when there was literally illegal surveillance of, the Thomas Merton Center in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I remember when there was illegal surveillance of a PETA protest outside a Heavenly Ham store in the Atlanta area.
Yeah, and remember that scene from, I think, Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11, I think it was, where it was revealed that there's an agent who infiltrated some Quaker meeting or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I think when it becomes problematic, when it's really hideous, is when, say, a person infiltrates and then tries to lure people into doing something destructive or counterproductive somehow. That's when it is awful. But if they're just coming, I don't know, because in a way, whatever we're saying in these circles or over the phone or over our emails, I think we want as broad an audience as possible, including people in these agencies. Chalmers Johnson has been an advisor to the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, maybe in some other capacities, I don't know. I mean, Chalmers needs to get his information from progressive sources. He hasn't always been that way. He was a very totally establishment person for much of his career, Korean War veteran himself. But his thinking has shifted, and I think it's because we're open. And, what I'm saying, though, the thing about surveillance and...
Oh, yeah.
It's something that I don't think should necessarily spook us. And, frankly, I think it could be helpful.
I understand, and I also... Well, like I said, I also think there's not much to surveil. Most of it is made up in the fulminated brains of the right wing, like... what Andy was saying a little bit ago about wingers claiming that Earth First did the platform in the Gulf.
Right.
Ouch.
See, they're going to hear those stories. Again, back to the agents. We should not let Hannity just tell the stories of who we are and what we're about. Should we just let Limbaugh define what an environmentalist is as an eco-wacko, or define what a feminist is as a feminazi? Again, agents are listening. They're monitoring the right wing. You got to make sure that they have a clear view of what the left wing is about.
Yeah.
And if they're smart,
if for no other reason than so that they can see the very, very profound difference between the two. I'm going to try to get a couple more calls in, Preston. Good to hear from you, my friend. Have a wonderful weekend.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
If you can, let me share one quick resource. It's called Taking Root. It's the story of Wangari Maathai, the Nobel Peace Prize winner in Kenya. And that movie shows how in Kenya the military was transformed from an oppressive organization that was beating her and people in her Greenbelt movement to one that came to assist her and is now helping to plant those 30 million trees that are now growing in Kenya.
Beautiful. Taking Root.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Bob.
All right. Take care. Bye now. That's Preston calling from Denver. Always thought-provoking. And always, I think Preston really is our resident optimist. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hi.
Hey, it's Walter.
Hey, Walter, how are you?
First-time caller from Maine.
Well, welcome to the program.
Hey,
I hope you...
Hey, teabagger from your chat room.
Oh, great, okay.
Yep. No, I just wanted to say, I don't think I can compete with your last caller, but you have a great show, man.
Well, thank you very kindly. We've been at it for a little while, and we aim to please.
Yeah, it's great. I usually catch it on the restream, so it's...
Well, it was nice to see you in the chat room tonight.
Yep. So I was thinking, geez, man, I've never been on the radio before.
Take a breath. We've never lost a caller yet.
Okay. So I was thinking with these latest disasters we're having, I think we have a unique opportunity here.
Okay. Expand upon it, please.
Well, damn, he caught me, man. I don't know. Yes. I had all kinds of things I was going to say, but I wasn't actually prepared for you to actually answer my call, so.
Oh, I try to take everyone that comes in.
Right on. Well.
Well, no, I mean, we do have an opportunity to highlight, to do what we've been doing tonight, to talk about the fundamental faults in the system that lead to these things. I joke a lot, and I remember that line from, what is it, Richard Dreyfuss in Jaws, where he said, "This is not a boating accident." And this is not. These are not random acts of, you know, oh my gosh, who could have foreseen this?
Right.
These are things that happen as a result of corporate policies that put profit ahead of all else. I mean, I've got a quote here, Walter. I've got a quote here from a BP executive testifying before the Senate of the United States, November 19th, 2009. Okay. BP America's Vice President of Gulf of Mexico Exploration. Oh, my goodness, that's the very same guy. David Rainey. And he was testifying in opposition to proposed rules defending the existing regulatory system, or, you know, lack thereof. And he said the following, Walter.
Well, yeah, we know about that.
He said, "I think we should remember that scientific knowledge is always moving forward. And actually using the best available and the most up-to-date scientific information is part of the current regulatory system, and it supports the OCS Leasing Exploration and Development Program. And I think we need to remember that OCS has been going on for the last 50 years, and it's been going on in a way that is both safe and protective of the environment."
Right.
Now, that makes me want to run rabbits.
Yeah, it really does, man.
And the question is, was the guy lying out his ass when he said that?
Of course he was.
Or was he just, you know, "I was misinformed"?
Yeah, he was misinformed, right. Well, I don't know. I don't know, man. I just wanted to call. Like, you have a good show here. Yesterday's your comment that you made about during the song from Deliverance about getting the donkey.
Oh, get me a goat.
Yeah, that was great. I was rolling on the floor laughing.
Yeah, Agnes was sitting here looking at me going, "You're a bad man. You're a very bad man."
Yeah, that was brilliant. But one of the things, I used to drive trucks out of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Years ago, and I guess you're very well aware of this. One of the problems is there's no radio stations that people who do those types of things, which is most people, can listen to, you know. Like, if I didn't just come across your show randomly on my Apple notebook, I would have never even heard of this. And I think I don't think if there's a lack of audience, I think there's a lack of, you know, ability to hear it.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the problem...
I love it. I actually used to listen to that kind of stuff.
The problem with the internet is that there's no such thing as an accidental listener, like when you hit the scan button on your terrestrial radio. It's not there yet. If we had $10,000 to pay to a publicist, every liberal in America would know about us day after tomorrow. But,
I believe that. I really do. You have an outstanding show. There's no question that in my mind that that's the case.
The thing that stands between us and that is the $10,000. But you know that we're proud of what we do here. And frankly, every good thing that's ever happened has been through a random accident of listening, like what you just described, or word of mouth. Mike Malloy has been a profound influence in sharing what we're doing with the truth seekers who listen to him.
I've listened to him before. I like your show better. Just saying.
Bless your heart. I understand. I've been a Malloy fan since 1987.
I just like the show.
Yeah. It's the curse. I mean, I'd love for us to get on satellite radio, but again, that's $5,000 worth of equipment.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I live up here in Maine. I'm going to work on, an oyster farm this summer, and apparently already, we're going to do better because of the spill. It's like.
Yeah. Oh, and those are good oysters too. I'm an oyster freak.
The Marescotta River.
Oh, man.
You'll notice I don't have a Maine accent. I'm from Philadelphia.
Right. No. Yeah. Shuck me two dozen. Just sit me down. I'm happy. I love the stuff.
But on a serious note, I think the latest occurrences here, I mean, they're tragic and, disgusting. But again, there's an opportunity here.
If we choose to seize it and if we have the will to.
We don't really have a choice.
Whenever you're talking about liberals, Walter, never say that. Because, I've been at this long enough to know that, when it comes to so-called liberal media, there's a lot of us out there who could screw up a one-car funeral. I'm not trying to be derogatory. It's just that we don't have the megaphone to get the message out.
Right.
It's not even so much screwing up as it is we are not permitted to have a level playing field.
It's a funny thing because right now with the unfortunate disaster that just occurred, right now is the prime time that you guys could take effect.
Yeah, it is.
It's a golden opportunity, I think.
And the question is, will
a so-called liberal president, which I
me too. But you're not convinced? Yeah, me either. But he is better than the alternative. All you have to do is just flash forward in time and imagine. I've said this before. Imagine the newscaster. This is breaking news. Mm-hmm. We take you now to the White House for the announcement of the death from skin cancer of President McCain. President Palin is being sworn in. And you know what? Then I'm happy with Barack Obama again. That's all I got to do. Maybe that makes me shallow, but the thought of President Palin still gives me it gives me the trots.
I'm not unhappy with him. I think he's doing what he thinks he needs to do. I think there's a unique opportunity. Like I said, I think Rahm Emanuel, I believe, got a lot of flack for one of his comments that he made, and I forget what show it was on, where he said that you shouldn't let a disaster go to waste.
Yeah.
You recall that? I think this is a similar situation with the coal mines and the oil. I think it's a similar thing. I think it's time for people to wake up, to understand that it doesn't matter, to watch Dancing with the Idols or all that kind of bullshit or how healthy you are, eating Activa yogurt or anything like that, if you destroy the environment that you live in. And I think that's the important message that should be coming from all this right now. I think that's what, anyway.
I think you're right. Well, Walter, I hate to say it, but I got to roll. We are at the end of the
fine.
Program.
I'm sorry, man. I wasn't,
No, you did fine. You did fine.
Not fine.
And you'll do better the second time and the third and the fourth and the fifth and so on.
All right, Bob. Thanks for taking my call, man.
Oh, thank you for making it, Walter. Take care. Bye now.
All right. Later.
And we are at the hour. Time for me to go. My weekend begins. My long, long weekend until Monday. And with that in mind, let me apologize for the blinking lights that yet remain, and there are several of them. We'll try to hit it again on Monday. That's all I can promise. I'll be here. Hope you will, too. Thanks to everybody who makes this happen. Thank you for some generous contributions that have come in. We will finish. It looks as though we will finish April only. Let me do the math in my head real quick. Only about $125 short of our actual fundraising goal for the month, which is really pretty good. I can't complain. We'll get the bills paid, and that means that there will be a May of the horn. And if we do it again, there'll be a June. I wish we played the game otherwise. But it's because of your dedication that we're in the game at all, and we are manifestly grateful. Thank you to everybody who makes it happen. John Fox, who will be working on the website over the weekend, so don't flip out when you see a very low-functional page with just links to the chat room and the stream. That means good things are happening. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest-working man in liberal talk, whiterosesociety.org. Our IT professional is Peter Godbold. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. And thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know. The happy news about Marsh Fork Elementary proves what I say every night about the wonderful, wonderful people at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy.
Mark this day. Mark this day well. It is about a minute and a half past the hour of 6 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Mark this day and mark it well. Mark this day as a day that proves that determined people of good conscience, goodwill, and unflagging spirit can make a change in the face of manifest evil and can make a change for the good where no one thinks that they can. Mark this day and remember it. This is one of the best days of my life. This is a beautiful day. This is an exquisite day, marked itself marked by the heavens themselves. Clear blue skies, warm temperatures, sweet green grass in the yard, and the most joyful trip I have ever taken to Charleston, West Virginia in my life. Mark this day. For this day, I heard something that I thought I would never, ever hear in all my life. This morning I drove down to the Capitol at Charleston, West Virginia, and I heard something magnificent, stunning, and stirring. Today, I heard it announced that there will be built a new Marsh Fork Elementary School. The toxic horror at the foot of the leaking earthen dam holding back 2.8 billion gallons of toxic coal waste that sits beside a coal preparation facility and little children are expected to learn there in 2 years' time will be no more. A new, magnificent community school will be built to replace it. In a safe place, in a place where children need not try to learn in fear. It is the culmination of a 6-year-long struggle that has included protests and arrests, that has included one man setting out from his home in the Coal River Valley and walking all the way to Washington, D.C. Ed Wiley. It has included letters and calls made by you yourselves from every corner of this huge nation. People in Washington State made aware and concerned about the well-being of children they have never seen and will never see. People in Oregon, California, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Kentucky, New York, Massachusetts, Michigan, Illinois, all over this country, who have raised the awareness of Marsh Fork Elementary's plight. And have helped to make this a reality. What a magnificent day. What a day to prove